सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै।
ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति।
ॐ समस्त जन कल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम् सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम्। ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवतां नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेनां कथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणी भगवती अष्टादशाध्यायिनी अम्ब त्वामनुसन्ददामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी। नमोऽस्तु ते व्यासविशालबुद्धे फुल्लारविन्दायतपत्रनेत्र येन त्वया भारततैलपूर्णः प्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमय प्रपन्नपारिजाताय वैत्रैकपाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः। सर्वोपनिषदो गावो पालनन्दनः पार्थो वत्ससुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचाणूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगत्। नेक्स्ट् वन् ऐ जस्ट् लीड् अण्ड् वी केन् फालो। नेक्स्ट् टु भीष्मद्रोणतटा जयद्रथजला गान्धारनीलोत्पला शल्यग्राहवती कृपेण वहनी करणेन वेलाकुला अश्वत्थाम विकर्णघोरमकरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनी सोतीर्णा खलु पाण्डवैरणनदी। कैवर्तककेशवः So this Bhagavad Gita, the word Gita means song, and Bhagavat is the sixth case when Bhagavan is mentioned in the sixth case of. So this is the song of the Lord. Bhagavan means the Lord, and Srimad means respected. So this book, this Bhagavad Gita, was told by the Lord Shri Krishna, as most of you know, but there are a few new people. So the Lord himself, Shri Krishna, teaches this message to Arjuna, who is a warrior, who is a student. And in the middle of this war, the war that was going on between the evil and the good brothers were five, and their evil cousins were 100, and there was a major battle because the evil had taken over the good and the country was being run by the evil people who had dishonestly stolen the kingdom. And the good brothers, the five Pandavas, had to first ask, but when they didn't get what their right was, then they had to fight for it. And so Krishna, the Lord himself, whom we consider as an incarnation of Lord on earth, actually took the side of the good and supported them and helped them in this struggle. And that's how this Gita is very symbolic of all of us, because in us, we have good and bad qualities both. The good are less, are 5. The evil are 100. There are a lot more evil tendencies, a lot more evil attractions for us in the world. And there is a constant struggle when I'm faced with doubtful situations, what I should do, what I should not do. And depending on which side I support, if I support the good, then that becomes predominant. If I support the evil, then the evil becomes predominant. But if Lord is with me, if I consider the Lord as with me, which he is, then the good wins. And so that's why this battle is actually very symbolic of what happens to each and every one of us every day as we face situations. And he was facing a battle in the battlefield, but we face our own battles when we deal with situations, whether it's in my family, with my spouse, with my children, my teenagers, my boss, my coworkers, in the traffic. So in life, we constantly face challenges. So this Bhagavad Gita gives us the message from the Lord himself as to how we can overcome our worldly challenges, our worldly problems. That's why this Gita is called the Bhagavad Gita. And Srimad means it is respectfully called Srimad, as the it's like the Holy Bible. You know, the Bible is not, we don't say Bible, we say Holy Bible. That means you respect it. So similarly, Srimad is a way of respectfully addressing this book. Now, when we talk about God, which is what is addressed in this text, talks about who God is, how we can know him, and how we can reach him and become one with him. So that was the essential message of this text, that who am I, what is my duty, what is God, how I can reach him and become one with him. And ultimately, that is the goal of human birth, which is called self-realization or God-realization, becoming one with God. And that is something that can be accomplished in this living body itself. You don't have to wait after death, I will go meet God, which is true, we will. But the goal of this scripture is that right now, here in this human body itself, as you give up your ego, as you give up your selfishness, you come closer to this truth, closer to God, and ultimately the oneness. And that is called Advaita. That means one, that God and I are one. We are not separate. So who is God? So there are 6 qualities that are talked about God. Actually, the God has millions of qualities. That's why we have 1,000 names. But these 6 are highlighted in our scriptures. And they are in Sanskrit, but I'll translate it. So Aishwarya means lordship. So he is the Lord of the whole universe. The whole universe is controlled by him. The stars, the planets, everything works. The trees grow, the flowers bloom in spring. Everything happens at the right time. The moon rotates. So everything. So he is the Lord of the universe, Aishwarya. Then second is Yasha. Yasha means fame. And he is famous. He is well known. Everybody knows God. Everybody loves God. Everybody respects God. At least we should. But so Yasha means fame. Shri means wealth. So Shri means wealth. And he has all the wealth. Obviously, everything in the universe belongs to him, even though I might say it's my house, my car, my wealth, my bank balance, my stock portfolio. But ultimately, everything belongs to him because we don't carry it with us. You may have $1 million in the bank. Your stocks may be big. You may have a car, a house. But ultimately, everything you have to leave, and whatever this universe is, it is his, and he has just given it to us to use. So we should consider this earth as a rental, that I'm here as a tenant. This is my house given to me by God. These children have been given to me by God. They are not my children. I'm here to take care of them. So Shri is wealth. Dharma, the word dharma means righteousness. Righteousness. So God's, when we are with God, then we are on the right. We are not on the wrong. You can't go wrong if I do anything and say, will God be pleased with it? Automatically, it has to be the good thing. It cannot be something wrong. Because if I do something wrong, then not only God, but God within me will not be pleased. God is not only outside in heaven or in the temple or church or mosque, but he's in my heart. And we automatically know that right away when I have done something wrong. I know that. So that is God within me. Dharma means righteousness. Dharma also means the essential nature. It is the one that supports the whole universe. So God is the one that supports everything. Even when we are asleep, our body continues to function. The trees grow, the grass grows, everything happens, the animals, everything is working because of that substratum, the support. Vairagya means detachment. So what it means is that even though God is in the universe, God is functioning through every one of us, but he is not attached. He or she, even to God, to call him he, is also a misnomer. That's why in Sanskrit, God is considered as that. It is considered as neutral, which means he's neither male nor female. It or that is a better way to address God. But generally, traditionally, we call him as he, but it is neither male nor female. It is the substratum. It is like energy in the electricity in the bulb is neither male nor female. It is the energy. So God is the energy, the support. So dharma, then vairagya is detachment. So even though God is functioning in this world, through the world, in the world, but he is not attacked. He is not affected. Whatever is happening to me, I may be healthy, unhealthy, I may be happy, unhappy, I may be successful, unsuccessful, but the Lord within me provides the energy and does not get affected. It's like electricity. If the bulb is bright or if the bulb is broken and is not functioning, nothing happens to the electricity. Electricity continues to be flow through the wire. If the bulb is bright, it will give light. If the bulb is dull and covered with mud, the light will be dull. And if the bulb is broken, the electricity will remain unaffected. So that is called vairagya or detachment. And the last word is moksha. Moksha is also added with jnana or knowledge. Moksha is called liberation. So people think that the goal of human birth is liberation, and that is very true. I have to be liberated from what? So people think liberation is something happens after death. After death, I'll go and live with God forever and then I'll be free. That is true. That is true. And for a wise person or a saint, that person goes and becomes one with God. But as we said before, moksha is liberation is not only to be obtained after death. It has to be obtained here, now itself. In this human body, I can be liberated. And what am I to be liberated from? I'm to be liberated from my sorrows, from my agitations, from my uncertainty. Because these are the things that bother us. Sorrows, agitations, and uncertainty. I don't know what will happen. And so that is what disturbs us. That is what bothers us constantly. Sorrows, you know, life will bring problems. If we don't have problems, the neighbor will bring it, or the spouse will bring it, or my teenager will bring it, or my boss will bring it. Success and failure will be there, but a wise person remains unaffected. He or she functions in the world, sees the world as a play, does his role, whatever role he is assigned to do. If I have the role of a father or a mother or a student or a teacher or a boss or a businessman, I do my role to the best of my ability, knowing that life will bring me problems. As long as I am with God, problems cannot touch me. And that's why if you look at these great saints and prophets, they had so many problems. Look at Jesus, look at Buddha, look at Narsimha Mehta, look at Mirabai. They had all kinds of problems, but they were able to remain above them, because they had become one with God. And that jnana means right knowledge. So when you have the right knowledge, then no matter what kind of problems come, the world cannot touch me. So people, when they approach God, when we go to the temple or church, what do we ask for? Majority of the people ask for the first three. They want lordship. They want more property, more power. They want more business, bigger house, or they want yasha, they want fame, and they want wealth. That is 99.99% people who go to the temple or church. What do they say? God, give me more money, give me a better life, give me a bigger house, give me more business, make me more successful. You know, this vice president, you know, let me take over his job. You know, he's not doing a... That's all we ask for. But there are very few people who ask for the bottom three. And dharma is that righteousness. God, help me to do the right thing. God, help me to get detached. Let me not be too much attached to my worldly things. Let me be attached to you. And let me get the highest knowledge of you. So when we go to God, these are the three things we need to ask. May I do the right thing? May I be detached? May I not be affected? And may I have the right knowledge so that I become one with you? Very few people go to God and say, I want you. You know, most people say, God, give me this, give me that. So what we are doing is, we are using God to get something else which is better. God is there, but I should get more money. I should get more power, better job. So what I have done, I have made God an instrument to get something which is better. Obviously, an instrument, like I use a spoon to eat the food. The food is the main goal. The spoon is just an instrument, unimportant. So similarly, we use God as an instrument to get something which is better. And that is very foolish, because God is the highest thing. So that's why they say that when you go to God, ask for the right thing. And what is that? God, be with me, stay with me, and take care of me. And that is the highest goal of human birth. So now today we shall start this Gita Dhyanam. Those of you who have this, the first chapter. But I'll just give a brief introduction to what is Gita Dhyanam. Gita, of course, as we said, is the song of the Lord. It is, this whole book is called Bhagavad Gita or the Holy Gita. And Dhyanam means invocation. Dhyanam has many meanings. Dhyanam also means meditation, but here it is invocation. So whenever we start the study of any scripture or do anything, even if we start a construction of a new building, or we start a house, or we build a factory, we always invoke the Lord's grace, right? God. And we usually offer prayers, you know, at least in the Hindus, we will have the priest come and he will offer some prayers, you know, to the fire so that the project may be successful. If I'm starting a new factory or if I'm building a new home, may there be peace in my home. So we always pray. And even before we enter the house, you know, we offer some prayers. And similarly, we also, each one of us should do that. If we don't do it, is before we leave the house in the morning, just bow down. If you have a little altar or a picture of God or a cross or Christ or something, bow down and ask for the Lord, oh, please be with me as I go about my duties. So the day should start with prayer. Actually, we say soon as you get out of bed, soon as you get up, you should chant the Lord's name. As soon as you wake up, before even you get out of bed, chant the Lord's name at least 11 times. Oh Father, oh Lord, oh Om Namah Shivaya or whatever. So that the day should start by remembering the Lord. And when you go to bed at night, that I'm also, we say when you lie down, just relax your body, breathe, and then chant the Lord's name. So that the first thought in the morning should be God's name. And the last thought as you go to bed should be the name. So these verses are introductory verses which talk about A, what this book has, Gita, B, who is the author of this book, C, who told this message. As we said, Lord Krishna told the message to Arjuna. So it talks about who is the giver of this message and what can we get from this text. So this is our introductory verses or invocation verses, so which will kind of prepare us to study this. And we always, before we start the study every Sunday, we chant some of the verses from this to kind of prepare our mind to be ready for the studying. Swami Chinmayananda, our guru, says that it is like the fine tuning, just as when a scientist goes on his microscope, how he fine-tunes his instrument so that he can see clearly what is under the microscope, he adjusts it. So this will adjust our mind ready for the study. So we'll do the first verse, and then if we have time, do the second or third. I have written some of the points here, so you can follow them along. Is everybody able to see the board? Okay. So the first verse, Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam. Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam. Vyasena Grathitam Purana Muninam. Madhye Mahabharatam. Advaitamritavarshini.
Advaitamritavarshini.
Bhagavati.
Bhagavati.
Ashtadashadhyayani.
Ashtadashadhyayani.
Ambatvamanusandadhami.
Ambatvamanusandadhami.
Bhagavad Gita Bhavadveshini.
Bhagavad Gita Bhavadveshini.
So I'll translate each word and then try to cover the major points of this verse. So Om is God's name, and it is used, it is called a Mangal Vachak, which means it is an auspicious word. So God, even though God has taken different forms, but we believe that the Supreme Consciousness or Brahman is formless. It is all pervading. Even though he has different forms as Krishna, as Buddha, as Jesus, as Ram and Saraswati and all these gods and goddesses and different forms. But the origin of the universe, Brahman, is formless. It is the total substratum. So that formless is difficult for us to contemplate upon. So Om is the symbol, is called the word symbol, which represents God's name. And that's why Om is, as everybody knows now, Om has become a universal word. Everybody, when they meditate, they say Om like that. So Om represents God's presence. And we'll talk a little bit about Om when I give the commentary. So Om Parthaya. Parthaya is Arjuna's name. So to Arjuna, who is the warrior, the student, Pratibodhitam, it was explained to him, told him, revealed to him. So this message was revealed to the student, who is called Partha, also called Arjuna, who Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam. So the Lord Bhagavan Narayana himself Swayam revealed this knowledge. That's why this Gita has special place in our heart, because the Lord himself revealed it. He came down to earth and gave us this knowledge. And who then composed it? See, the student and the teacher spoke in the battlefield, but there was Vyasji. Vyas was the author of this Gita, these 700 verses, who took that message and put it in a poetical form, in a poetry form, with proper meter and all, into 701 verses. So Vyasena Grathitam. So Vyasa is the one who then put it to poetry and composed it. And who is he? Purana Munina. He is the very ancient sage or saint. Ancient because he lived many years ago. And also Vyasa himself we consider as an incarnation of Vishnu, an incarnation of God. So we consider him very ancient. And where was this teaching given? Teaching was not given in a classroom. In the olden days, people used to go to the guru and sit at his feet in the forests or in the Himalayas, or under the banks of a tree, where it was very peaceful. The trees were there, the river was flowing, the soft wind was blowing, and it was a very quiet, isolated atmosphere, very conducive to knowledge. This knowledge was not given under the tree or in the mountains, it was given in the middle of the battlefield, where there's all this noise and confusion and all the armies are ready. So it was given in the Mahabharata war, in the war which was about to take place. And I'll talk about what was the situation. Madhya Mahabharatam, in the Mahabharata war. And what does the knowledge of this Bhagavad Gita? Advait Amrita Varshini. So Advait Amrita, it is the, give us the knowledge of oneness. Dvaita means two, Advaita means not two, oneness. So the knowledge or the nectar of oneness was given in this text. And Varshini, man, it is showering this grace upon us. The Lord himself is showering his grace upon us through this scripture. And we call Bhagavad Gita as Bhagavati. Bhagavati means mother. So we revere this book as we revere our mother. So why? Because she, just as a mother gives us knowledge, you know, when we are growing up, is the mother who will hold a child's hand and teach him how to walk, teach him how to eat, how to speak. A, B, C, D and all that is taught by the mother. So this is why the Gita is respected like the mother, because she teaches us to walk and talk. How? In our life. In our life when we have problems. Just as when we have problems, we call our mother for advice. So similarly, this Gita is like the mother. And Ashtadasha Adhyayani, and it has 18 chapters. Ashtadasha means 18, Adhyaya means chapters. So it has 18 chapters, and Amba, and again he calls it mother. Mother, Tvam Anusandadhami, on you, Tama, upon you. Anusandadhami means I meditate upon you. Who are you? Bhagavad Gita. You are the Bhagavad Gita. Bhavadveshini. Bhavadveshini means it removes all sorrows of this world. Any problems can be removed by studying this Bhagavad Gita. So Om. Om, actually, about a couple of years back, I had given a talk on Om. It's actually available in the office. It's a CD. But I had given about a 45-minute talk on Om called The Meaning of Om. If anybody wishes, it's available in the office. But I'll just talk in very brief about Om, not go into the detail. So Om is, a lot of people spell it as, first of all, yeah, this 9 verses were written by Madhusudan Saraswati. He was a great saint. So this 9 verses are not in the actual Gita. They are not in the 700 verses. They were written separately by a great sage called Madhusudan Saraswati, who was a great saint who actually composed these 9 verses, and they were placed ahead of the Bhagavad Gita as an invocation. Now, Madhusudan Saraswati was a great author, a great poet, a great scholar, and a great teacher, and a saint. But when he composed these verses, he also wrote a commentary on the entire Bhagavad Gita. He actually wrote a commentary on all the 700 verses. But he said, my commentary is useless. Why? Because the revered one has already spoken about it. So the revered one he mentioned was Shankaracharya. And Shankaracharya was a great scholar and saint who lived in the 8th century in India. And today, actually, we are celebrating his birthday. So if people wish, they can go to the hall. And I'll talk a little bit about that great saint, Shankaracharya, today, who he was. But we consider him, in a way, the father of our mission, this Chinmaya mission, which is worldwide, which has about 300 branches all over the world. The teachings of the Chinmaya mission are based on Shankara's teaching, Shankaracharya's philosophy. So even though Swami Chinmayananda, we consider him the founder of the mission, but the knowledge has come down from Shankaracharya from the 788, from around that time. So this Madhusudan Saraswati, when he wrote the commentary, he said, my commentary is useless. Because the revered one, the Shankara, has already given a commentary, and no other commentary can be as good. So they said, okay, but then why are you giving a commentary? If you say your commentary is useless, it's not worth. I mean, he was, of course, a great scholar, and his commentary is wonderful, but it was his humility. So they said, why are you giving a commentary then if you think that it's no good? He says, you know why I'm teaching this? Just to purify my tongue, to purify my mind. Because chanting the Lord's name and giving, he says, I'm not giving to enlighten the people. I'm not even giving it to please God. I'm not even giving it I'm just doing it to purify my tongue, to purify my mind. And that's what even Tulsidas ji, when he wrote the entire Ramayana, has a very beautiful verse. He says, Nij gira pavan karan karan Ram jasu tulsi kahyo. So he said this Ramayana, which is another great book, he said, I'm not writing it to tell people about Ram. I'm not even writing it to praise Ram. Just by writing Ramayana, my tongue gets purified. So when you chant the Lord's name or when you give his message, it may or may not benefit others. If the others benefit, good, but at least my own tongue will be purified. So that is the reason this commentary was written by Madhusudan Saraswati. So then the next word is Om, which is the first word of this first verse. So Om has many meanings. As I said, it is the sound symbol of God. But it also represents many things. So Om has A-U-M. So Om, we don't chant as Om, we chant as Om. You know, we chant long Om, and then we have silence. So you chant Om, and then there is silence, and then again Om. So Om, we don't chant Om, 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 not like that. Om has to be chanted slowly with a silence. So the A represents the waking state, the U represents the dream, and the M represents the deep sleep. So waking, dream, deep sleep. These are the three states when we go through. All of us, you know, we are awake, then we are dream, and then we are in deep sleep. I think some of you may already be ready for that. But if not, so I'll at least maybe tell some jokes to hopefully keep you awake so you don't fall asleep. So A-U-M, so waking, dream, and deep sleep. And then after that, the silence represents what we call in Sanskrit the fourth state or the Turiya state, the state of enlightenment, the state of silence. Because an enlightened master then has nothing more to say. He becomes quiet. He becomes silence. Because silence, that's why they say speech is silver, but silence is golden. So silence is better than speech. And in fact, speech emerges from silence. Like when I stop talking, then in this room, there will be silence. And then when we speak, the sound emerges from silence and merges back into silence. So similarly, this Om emerges from silence and merges back into the silence. So that fourth state of silence is called the Turiya state or the state of enlightenment. So Om represents all four states, waking, dream, deep sleep, and then the state of enlightenment or the Turiya state. Also Om, it is said, if you chant before you die, it is very auspicious. That's why in the Gita, in the 8th chapter, Krishna says, Om itek aksharam brahma. So when somebody, it is chanted, mam asma anusmaran, one who chants it, remembering me, reaches me. So they say, so is that the best thing? Yes. The best thing to chant before you die is God's name. Here, of course, it can be Om for a Christian, it could be Jesus. For a Muslim, it could be Allah. So chanting the God's name is the best thing, because if you chant the last thing before you die, if you chant the God's name, then you reach him. That's what he says. He said, no matter what I have done, yes, no matter what you have done, if at the last breath you remember me, you will go to me, God says. He said, oh, that's very easy then. At the last moment, I'll remember you. Yeah, but you don't know when your last moment is going to be. Do we know that? No, we don't know. So they say, make a habit of remembering God every moment of the day from now itself, so that it will come automatically. If you have never remembered God, if you have never prayed to him, then at the time of death, how will you remember him? So this reminds me of a story. So there was this businessman, very successful, very rich. And he ultimately got very old, and he said, I don't want to die in the hospital. You know, when I'm that bad, take me home. So his children brought him home from the hospital on hospice. And he was, you know, on his last breath, you know, just probably wouldn't have survived more than a few minutes. So what they did was they called 11 priests And they were all chanting the Bhagavad Gita, 11 of them. So they said, you know, when he listens to the chanting, then the last thought will be the Bhagavad Gita. So that is wonderful. He will go to heaven because it is said, Om Ite Kaksharam Brahma Vyaharen Ma Manusmaran. So whoever chants remembers me at the time of death will go to me. So 11 priests were chanting Om, Om and all this Gita and all. And children were very happy, you know. At least our father, even though he lived his whole life, you know, doing business, he'll go to God. And so he was half awake and half asleep. And then he asked his son, who are these? So son says, father, we have called 11 priests, you know, and they are chanting the Bhagavad Gita, 11 of them. He said, 11? They said, yeah. He said, and each priest, we will be paying them $100. So $1,100, and he said that and he died. So his last thought was $1,100. So his poor children did everything they could, but it didn't help him. So if all your life, if you have thought of money, or if you have thought about my child, or my this, or my that, or my dog, my God, people are so attached to the dog. Day and night they think about God, just reverse it, dog. Think about God is so much better. And it amazes me how people are so attached to their pets. It's good. I'm not saying that having pets. But don't be so attached. My cat, my dog. You know, think about God, please. You know, and children is okay. Children, you are supposed to take care. But once they are gone, then forget about them too. Yeah, if you see them, when if they need help, you see them. Otherwise, you are good. Take care of your family. Your children, my rest of my time is devoted to God. So that is what they say. Om is the holy word. Now Partha. Partha was Arjuna's name, one of his names. Arjuna had many names, Dhananjaya and so on. But Partha was this name that they used in this particular verse. Partha. Partha, the word Sanskrit means, comes from earth. Artha, Partha, Prithvi, Prithvi, so it is from earth. That means Arjuna was born of the earth. And we are all born of the earth too. You know, we are all, our body is made of mud. That's what they say. This is food sheath. And then there is the mental sheath and the inner sheath. But our outer sheath, this body is made of food, is made of mud. So we are all Arjuna. So what the meaning is that when we study the Bhagavad Gita, we should think that this message is for me. It was not only for Arjuna, but it is for me. I have to study it. So Gita should be studied as for me, not that I am watching somebody else, Krishna teaching this message to Arjuna, and I am watching it like a third person, but I am the second person. I am getting this message from the Gita. Partha has many other meanings. Also, his mother's name was Pritha. So Kunti's other name was Pritha. That means he was son of Pritha. Then the third meaning of Partha is Pa and Artha. If you split Pa and Artha, P is separate and Artha is separate. So P represents Parameshwar, represents God. So Artha means one whose goal was God. See, he was such a devotee of the God that pa artha, you say, na, tumhare jeevan ka arth kya hai? What is the purpose of your life? So he said, the purpose of my life is to know God. So if you want God to give you this message, you have to make God your purpose in life, your goal in life. Artha also means wealth. So Parmeshwar artha, so God was his wealth. God was his wealth, God was his goal, God was his purpose, God was everything for him. So that is how we have to make God as the most important person. Of course, we have to take care of our family, do our duty, wherever, whether I'm a doctor or an engineer, mother, father, child, sister, brother, I have to fulfill all my duties. But my highest duty is to God, number one. Number two, when I'm serving people, I should see God in everybody. In my family, in my co-workers, in everybody. So that is called Partha. Now Narayana is another, is actually God's name. So this Narayana, this Vishnu or Narayana appeared as Krishna. On this earth, we say Vishnu is the, or Narayana is the supreme God, and he appeared on the earth as Krishna. So Krishna's name is Narayana. Now the word Narayana in Sanskrit has again many meanings. That's why they have thousand names of God, but I'll just give a few meanings. Narayana, first of all, is Vishnu, and Vishnu is said to be all-pervading. So God is all-pervading, which means God is everywhere. He is in me, he is in the tree, he is in the chair, he is in the mic. Everything is God because everything came from him, emerged from him. God was the source. So just as mud is there in all the pots, gold is there in all the ornaments, so God is there in everything on this earth, even in the evil, even in the good, God is there in everybody. So he's all pervading. Then Narayana can be split into Nara and Ayana. Nara means human, Ayana means again the source, the support. So he is the support of every one of us. Narayana also, Nara of the word also means five elements. You know, we are all made of five elements: space, air, fire, water, earth. So space, air, fire, water, earth. We are all made of five elements. So Nara means the five elements. Ayana means the support. He's pervading all the five elements. Then Nara also means water. Nara means water, and Ayana means one who stays in water. And in our mythology, Vishnu, Bhagwan, the Lord Vishnu, is on the ocean. He's on the ocean of milk. And so that's why Nara is water. And so God is the one that stays in water and is in all the five elements. And there are many other names. You can go on and on. But we'll just cover only two or three meanings of Narayana. There are other meanings also which we can do. Then, as we said, the Gita should be studied in the second person, that God is speaking to me. God is not speaking to anybody else. God is speaking to me. So the first reading, those of us who are studying the Bhagavad Gita for the first time, you should study in the second person, that God is speaking to me. Then the next time, after you have gone through the Gita, when the next time you read it, it should be in the first person, I am speaking. So when God is speaking, this is what I also believe in. So from the second person, it should become the first person. That means God within me is speaking to me. So it is no longer God is speaking to somebody else. God is speaking to me. I am speaking. So the identity with God should come. So with the second or third reading, from second person, it should become first person. I am speaking in the sense, yes, this is what I believe. And I agree with it, and this is what I was thinking. So it should no longer become, see, right now this book is, no, Krishna knows it, or Swami Chinmayananda, who has written this commentary, he knows it, but I have to know it as my understanding. So from the second person, it should become first person. I know it. Nobody else. It's like the Bible. You say Jesus knows it. Yes, God knows it, but do I know it? So that is when I know it, then it becomes my knowledge. Then it's no longer Jesus' knowledge or God's knowledge or Father in heaven, but it is my knowledge. So that's how it should be studied. And Gita should be for transformation, not for information. See, people say, Gita done, I have studied it. So it becomes information. Then tomorrow I will study Upanishads, then Brahma Sutra, then I will read Buddha, then I will read Confucius, then I will read Max Müller. So we keep reading different philosophies for information. You know, then you ask somebody, have you read this? Yes, yes, yes. So people ask me, have you read this book? Have you read this book? Actually, tell you the truth, I have read very little. You know, if you think you are in the presence of a scholar, you are sadly mistaken. I have really read very little philosophy. I have not read much of any philosophies because it's just information we are collecting. It's more than information. It has to be transformation. I have to change my life according to the scripture. Then only the reading is useful. Otherwise, you are just listening. And you know, that's why listening alone is not enough. That's why I request every one of you, go home and read this again. Or read it before you come, like Barbara does. What verses we are going to cover, read them beforehand, or you can go home and read them. So the point is that the knowledge will become your knowledge. Right now, is something I am speaking, but it should become your understanding. And that's why this book is very helpful. Also, these talks are online. Tony here puts them online. If you go to firstpower.info, or if you Google talks by Dr. Anil Mehta, you can listen to these verses again. By Thursday, they will be online, so you can listen to them again. So it should cause transformation, not information. Then he says, bhava dveshini. Bhava. Bhava is the very important word in our Sanskrit. The word bhava means becoming. And we always want to become something. I always want to become because this is not good enough. So I was living in India. Okay. So from India, I came to America. So it is becoming. From Indian, I became American or Indian American. Then I had 1 degree in India, but I wanted to get a second degree. So I got a second degree. Then I got a master's and then I got a PhD. So I become a master's and becoming a PhD. Then I was living in an apartment. And then from apartment, I moved to a townhouse. And then from a townhouse to a regular house. And then from a regular house to a house on the country club or a house by the lake. I had first a 1-car garage. Then I got a 2-car garage. Then a 3-car garage. I was single and then I got married, became 2. And then from 2, I became 3. From 3, I became 4. So we are always becoming. You know, I was assistant manager. Then I became manager. Then I became a vice president. Then I became CEO. So we are all the time becoming. So this world is also called as a bhava, as an ocean of becoming, where I'm here and my whole life is spent on acquiring, becoming, doing this, doing that. We really don't have much time for knowing God, because God is not a priority for us. He's the last priority. After everything is done, after I've taken care of my business and taken care of my children, and I've already gone to all the parties I want to go, and then I have eaten everything, and then I have built my house and everything. And then last, we have a little bit of time for God. Maybe, you know, Sunday morning, 1 hour I'll give you, God. You know, that's all I can do for you. I'll go to church for 1 hour or go to listen to Gita. That's it. My duty is done. I'll see you next Sunday. So our time for God is very limited. So they said, make him your priority. Becoming, of course, we have to become. We have to become successful. We have to take care of our children. But that is not all life should not be spent in becoming. And the Bhagavad Gita tells us how to get out of this ocean. That's why this world is called an ocean in which I am drowning. Bhava Sagar. He says, my Bhava Sagar mein doob raha. I'm drowning in this ocean. Oh God, only you can save me. So this knowledge will save us from this ocean of this world. Then in this process of becoming, we find that certain things are easy and certain things are difficult. Like getting old, you know, it's very easy. We'll all get old. You don't have to put any effort to do that. And secondly, another thing that is very easy is weeds. To grow weeds in your garden, do you need to put any effort? No, you don't need to put. You just go away for 2 weeks and your garden will be full. To grow plants takes a lot of effort. Ask Hansa, you know, how beautiful her garden is. She's our premier gardener here. So to grow flowers takes a lot of effort. But to grow weeds, it doesn't take any effort at all. So similarly, in our mind, to grow weeds is very easy. You know, negative things come very easily to us. But to create a positive in my life takes more effort. To create positive thoughts is not easy. You know, where my mind should be turned towards God, where I should be doing good, I should be helping. So to create flowers in my mind takes effort. For weeds, they just grow on their own. So we have to make sure our mind is full of flowers and not weeds, positive and not negative. So the Gita tells us how to make our mind full of flowers. And then Vyasa is the author. We'll talk a little bit more about him in the next verse. Who was Vyasa? But just briefly, Vyasa was the author of the Bhagavad Gita, who took this entire this discourse or discussion between Krishna and Arjuna and put it to verse. He was, as we said, an incarnation of God himself. He was an encyclopedia of knowledge. He had done so much work. He had not only written the Bhagavad Gita, but the Bhagavad Gita appears in the Mahabharata, which was 100,000 verses. So 100,000 verses of Mahabharata he had composed. He had composed the Puranas and the Upapuranas, which are the stories of God, which are again voluminous. He had written the Bhagavatam, the story of Krishna. He had written so many texts, so much material was composed by him. In fact, they said anything in any spiritual language, anytime, if you think you have written something new, forget it. He already has written it. That's how it was, like an encyclopedia of knowledge. For you and me to remember few things is difficult, but he knew all that and he had written all that. So anything anybody has written anytime in any spiritual text has already been written by this great scholar. And we'll talk more about him next in the next verse, which is honoring this Vyasa himself. And then this Upanishad is called Ashoka Upanishad. Shoka means worry. Ashoka means don't worry. Why is it called? There are many Upanishads. There are more than 100 Upanishads. They say there are 108, out of which 12 are major, and then there are so many. And these are the ones we know about, but there are several hundred that were composed that we don't have record of. So why is this called the Ashoka Upanishad? Don't worry Upanishad. Gita is called don't worry. You know why? Because the first teaching, when it starts in the second chapter, in the 11th verse, is where the teaching actually starts. So Krishna says, Ashocha vana shochastvam pragnya vadamscha bhasate gatasuna gatasunscha nanu shochanti panditaha. So the first word is Ashocha, don't worry. And then in the 18th chapter, when he ends his teaching, Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharnam vraja aham tva sarva papebhya moksha ishyami ma shucha. So ma shucha means don't worry. So the first word of the teaching of the Lord was don't worry. And the last word of teaching he gives after 700 verses, after 18 chapter, again he comes down to his main point, that don't worry. So we are always worried. So this knowledge will free you from worries. So that is the essence of this beautiful verse. And then he says, I meditate upon you, O mother. By meditating, when we meditate, we become one with the knowledge. See, when whatever we know, when we sit and meditate, then you become one with God. That is the goal of meditation. So this Bhagavad Gita is giving us this knowledge. And what is the knowledge? Advaita means not two. So this knowledge is one. And what is the one? One meaning of Advaita, not the second, it is one alone, is that this knowledge is so unique that it is not there in any other scripture. This width of knowledge that is there in this one, that is one meaning. The second meaning of Advaita is we always think of God as being separate. God is somewhere away from us, he is in heaven, and I am worshipping him, and I'll reach him, and I'll know him. That is true. But in our scriptures, when they talk about the Upanishad, they say God is with you. You are part of him. You are not separate. So God and I are one. That oneness is taught in this Gita. So oneness means not that I am God, but that everything is God and I am also God. So that is the essence of this first verse. Any questions, any comments? We have a few minutes. I know I spoke a lot, but if there's anybody has any doubts, then.
Okay, you mentioned here the story about 11 priests, and then there's, you mentioned that we go out the door to say the oh 11 times. You know, there's a significance about that.
Yes.
What is
11? 11 has a lot of significance because, first of all, 1 is the first letter. 1 is, everything starts with 1. So 11 is 1 and 1, 11. So 1 is very auspicious. So 11 is auspicious. 108 is auspicious. So certain numbers are auspicious. 7 is auspicious. 9 is auspicious. So it actually is just a number. It doesn't really... It's not that, you know, by having 11 was anything better than having 10 or 9, but that's just what it is. So 1 is considered auspicious because it's the first. That's why when we give, when we do charity, we don't give $100, we give 101. So 1 means I'm going to do more. You see, we do like 10 plus 1 is 11. So when I don't give somebody $10, when we do charity, we don't do $10, we do 11. That means 10 plus 1. I'm going to give more. I plan to give more. That's why 101, 501. So that's why. So it's 10 plus 1. That's why 11 is auspicious. Yes. Yes. Right.
So they believed right from the beginning.
Yes. Yes. Numerology they believed in. In fact, the science of numerology is very ancient. This Vastu and this numerology is very ancient science. And that's how actually the whole mathematics came from, you know, from our ancient. Like zero was discovered by Aryabhata. In fact, there is a little joke about Aryabhata, if you have a minute. So this Aryabhata was a great mathematician. So he asked his wife, he says, I would like to go out every weekend with my friends. What is the chance of that? That's how he discovered zero. So yeah, so numerology is very ancient science. Yes.
So today also, if you want to do some good works or a super work, you should go according to numerology.
Yes, actually they say that if the science where actually they say that there is an auspicious time when you should do it, and if the pandit is really is well educated and calculates it correctly, yes, it does make a difference. An auspicious time, an auspicious place. That's why this Vastu, you know, they say like the home should face east, the back should face east so that the sun comes. So that is all, it is all scientific. You know, there are positive energies and, you know, vibrations. But again, I am a little bit of a heretic. What I believe is that if you remember God, that place becomes auspicious. If you start something remembering God's name, God, I invoke you and I remember you, that place becomes temple and that work becomes auspicious. If it's good, if you can do it with the priest's guidance, it's good. If not, you just sit down and say, God, look, I am stupid, I am foolish, I don't know anything. I am remembering you. You make it auspicious. And the moment you say Shri Krishna and Sharanam Mama, that place, Krishna is right there. So I actually am, I don't practice or believe that much, but the science is there. I'm not saying that. It is a very, very, very scientific and it's very important. And actually the vibrations do make a difference though, because like the direction you sleep, somebody had sent me, and I personally, it happened to me. My bed was, you know, my head was facing north and I used to wake up with headaches. And then somebody sent me one that says you should sleep. No, it was west. They said, you should be facing, I don't remember now what it was, but I changed the direction of my bed and my headaches got better. So it does, you know, there is a positive, because what happened is there is the earth is a pole. It is a north pole and a south pole. And we are also magnets. So north and south attract and north and north repel. So there is magnetism and energy. It is a very, very important science. Yes. The Vastu is very useful. Yes.
Sir, you said that everybody has God within. So why do we have a attraction towards our own family more than others?
Yeah, because I see myself in them. You know, because it's my wife, my son, my, you know, I carried
it's
him.
It's a natural attraction. It's
right.
Something we are creating.
Right, right. So, yeah, so, and the family is the unit of society. See, father, mother, and children are the unit of society. That's how society is formed. And that's why we find, you know, families where, you know, there's only mother or only father in broken homes. Like, you know, father, you know, mother and father never got married and, you know, she got pregnant, father went away, so child only grew up with mother. Then their development is not that good, you know, because they need both. So the unit of family is father, mother, and children. And if that is not there, then it becomes more difficult for the child to grow up. So if, like in your case, you know, your son or your daughter, you carried them for 9 months and you gave birth to them and then you fed them, you know, and then you brought them up. So you feel that oneness, you feel that closeness, and that is okay. But it should not be limited to only me and my family. It should extend to all. And that's why the idea of community service comes, you know, doing volunteer work and going out and helping so that I see God in all. God is not only in my family. My duty is not only to take care of my family, I should take care of, but that alone should not be my duty. It should extend to the, that's why we say Vasudeva Kutum, this whole world is God and this whole world is my family. So that's how these great saints could see that. You know, that's why Jesus could say, love thy neighbor as thyself, and it didn't matter who the neighbor is, so you can love him. So that is, so you extend that beyond family, but it is natural to be more close to your family, people you grew up with, people you live with your whole life, but don't limit it to that.
I have a question here.
Yeah.
So there's an organization that says that the oldest name of God is Hugh. I've never heard that, but just to them. And I could see, you know, there's relationship, Hugh, man. But I've never heard that it's the oldest, and it's...
Yeah,
have you ever heard of that?
No, I'm not familiar with that, Hugh, but, it's hard to disprove anything, but... I think different places, see, the human evolution happened in all different places. It grew, happened in Egypt, it happened in China, it happened in India. These were the three ancient civilizations where this, you know, where the human civilization started. And then this knowledge spread to the rest of the world. Those are the three ancient cultures, you know. So each one of them had an independent growth, but the source of all is God. So it doesn't matter which one is first or which one is, because God himself is ancient. Everything started from that. So make that as the most ancient. Everything else is secondary. That's why we say Purana Muninam. He is the ancient sage, means his origin is from God. But I'm not familiar with that word, Hugh. Yes?
This is a silly question, but I'm just curious. Gita, Bhagwan chanted Gita when it's almost like Mahabharata was going to start. So what, they just stopped the war until the whole...
Actually, I was going to talk about it next week. where it says 3 hours. It takes 3 hours to chant the Bhagavad Gita. So did the war start? I'll quickly answer that question. I was actually going to do it next week, but... See, it takes 3 hours to chant the Bhagavad Gita, right? But we always say, you know, Bhagavan Uvach, Arjuna Uvach, and then we gave the introduction of the first chapter where the whole battlefield was. They didn't need to do all that. They didn't need to, you know, they were just talking to each other. They didn't have to say there is a battlefield. And so a lot of the verses are describing the atmosphere, number one. Number two, they were fluent in Sanskrit, so they could talk much quicker. Thirdly, God, if they really took 3 hours, which probably they didn't, the message was short, God has the ability to freeze time. When everybody went into this trance and actually they thought it was only 2 minutes. So that is the number three. And number four, actually they didn't talk 700 verses and they were not singing. See, these verses are sung. They were talking in prose. This was then later on transcribed by Vedvyas into 700 verses and put in poetry And he said, Bhagwan Uvach and Arjuna Uvach. Bhagwan spoke and Arjuna spoke and gave the whole, the first chapter, which is the introduction and all. So actually, probably the message was much shorter and was not 3 hours long. Yeah. Because they were all ready to fight. That's a very good question. I was going to talk about it next week, but thank you for bringing it up. Yes.
Is this an example, like parabolic-wise, of him making the auspicious time right then by invoking when Krishna's administering the information with all this confusion maybe coming to example of finding that place among the confusion?
No, actually the reason for this knowledge was Arjuna was on the side of the good, but when he went in front of the opposite army, he saw that on the opposite army were his cousins. See, there were two families of cousins. One were the evil and one were the good. And on the cousin side, he saw his grandfather, his teacher, a lot of people that he respected. So he had doubt whether I should even fight, because this fight, war will create so much. The first chapter, when we do, it will talk about the whole outline of where the war was. And so he had a doubt whether I should even fight, because it will create so much destruction between two families, parts of the same family. But the question was that who is going to, because that was the most powerful kingdom. Hastinapur was the most powerful kingdom in India at that time. And will it be ruled by the evil or will it be ruled by the good? So that was the occasion. And so he was confused as to what is my duty, whether I should fight or not. So the Lord gives him what is his duty. So the first teaching is karma yoga. What is my duty? What I should do? So that's why he asks, can you please tell me? Because I'm confused. I don't see. So just as when the evil is predominant, like when Hitler was predominant in Europe, the people could have, and some people said, oh, we should have peace, like Chamberlain. He said, oh, we shouldn't fight. There should be peace. Let him have Poland. Let him have. So he was not satisfied with Poland and Czechoslovakia. He kept taking France and kept expanding, because the more you are, there are some people you can deal with peacefully and some people you can't. And finally, they had to stop him, So similarly, they tried all peaceful methods to stop this evil army, but they didn't listen. So then they had no choice but to fight. So this was an occasion where Arjuna was not clear what is his duty, just as you and I, many times we are not clear what is our duty. So this tells us what is our duty. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Makaschid Dukha Bhagbhave. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi, Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha, Harihi Om.